Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.wordpress.com.
Welcome to Luke's English Podcast. How are you? I hope that you're well. I usually hope that you're well at the beginning. There's not much more I can do, is there? I can just hope that you're well. I can't send you medicine. I could send you medicine through the post, but why would I do that? That might even be illegal. I don't know if you're allowed to send drugs through the mail. Anyway, welcome to Luke's English Podcast. This episode is all about my trip to New York. I think I told you a few episodes ago that I was going to go to New York on holiday. Either I told you in an episode of the podcast or I wrote it in a letter to you on my website. Either way, some of you know that I went to New York. And I said that I would record an episode in which I'd explain what I did and what it was like and exactly how it felt and all those sorts of things. So that's what I'm going to do in this episode. I'd like to tell you all about my holiday in New York. I'm going to describe it to you. I'll tell you what I did, what I saw, and all that kind of thing. Okay, good. You might be able to hear some ambient music in the background. You hear that? That is an app which I've got running while I'm recording the podcast. It's an app that generates atmospheric background music. If you leave it alone, it just sort of does its own thing and creates these loops of sound. But if you touch the screen, it will make a noise like this. Hear that? So if you touch the screen, it makes a noise. And then if you leave it, eventually those noises come back in a loop. And it kind of loops the sound, and it plays with them, and it creates nice atmospheric background music. This app is actually called Bloom. It's that's spelled B-L-O-O-M, and it's an award-winning app. It was developed by Brian Eno, who you might know. He's a musician, a British musician. He used to be in a group in the 70s called Roxy Music. He also, you know, had a solo career. He has worked as a producer with lots of famous artists, including David Bowie and U2 and plenty of other people. But Brian Eno, as well as doing that kind of music, has also devoted a lot of his time and his career towards making this kind of avant-garde ambient background music. And he's released lots and lots of albums over the years of this kind of stuff. He was really one of the innovators of this musical genre. So he's the father of ambient music. There are other people, classical musicians, maybe people like Eric Satie and others who sort of kicked the thing off. You know, music that could just sit in the background, that doesn't impose itself on what's going on too much. It's just music that creates a certain kind of atmosphere. Eric Satie is probably the most famous example of that. So you can hear the stuff going on in the background. Every now and then I'll change the music and I'll just tap the screen and it'll make different noises like this. Right, so you might hear that coming back in a few moments. So this, doing this with the music in the background, this is kind of an experiment on this episode. I'm going to have that going on in the background. I'll see how it sounds. I do put music in the background from time to time, just to give episodes another element, or just to take the edge off, you know. I hope this doesn't make you fall asleep. It might do. I realise that it might make you feel drowsy or sleepy because it's relaxing and nice. So it might make you fall asleep. I hope not. Well, I suppose if you do fall asleep, then we can just blame the music and not me, right? So if you start to feel sleepy and drowsy, that's not because of the content of the podcast. Oh, no, the podcast stuff is fascinating and riveting. I think the only reason you might start to drift off is just because of this nice relaxing music. So it's creating, for me, it's creating a nice warm vibe in the podcast this time. You could imagine, while listening to this, you could imagine that we are in the ambient pod and just floating around in zero gravity in the ambient episode of Luke's English Podcast. Yeah, so this music doesn't really relate to New York exactly, not specifically, although Brian Eno has worked in New York. He's done lots of art installations in galleries in New York, and this music that he does is often used in art galleries, museums, and other public spaces. That's part of his artistic vision, is that he wants to create music that will fill public spaces, and he's interested in how that can affect the way people interact with a physical space when there's certain kinds of music playing. So you hear this kind of stuff in art installations, things like that. It's a little bit artistic, a bit avant-garde, maybe a bit pretentious, but I like it myself. So lots of art galleries in New York. There you go. There's the connection to New York. Right. So New York, New York, New York. Let's see, I'm going to tell you my holiday story. Now, I know that sometimes people's holiday stories can be a bit boring, can't they? Especially if they just go to the beach. You know, when your friend has come, has been to, on a beach holiday for 2 weeks, and they come back and, you know, you see them and you make the right conversation. Hi, how was the holiday? You look great, you've really caught the sun, you've got a lovely tan. How was the holiday? What did you do? And your friend goes, oh, let me tell you all about it. Look, I've got photos. I've got loads of photos to show you. I've got a million photos to show you. And you kind of go, oh, a million? Wow, I can't wait to see them all. And he said, yeah, and I took video as well. I've got 3 hours worth of video to show you. And you think, great, great, some holiday video. Wonderful. He says, come over and I'll show you the video. And you kind of go, all right, will there be wine? I think I might need wine. So, yeah, people's holiday stories can be a bit boring, especially if it's just the beach, because there's not that much to tell about the beach. It's like, so how was the holiday? Well, you know, there was the sky. We had the sky, sea, and the sand, basically. It was sand, the sea, and the sky, and it was great. The sun as well was there. That was nice. Oh, really? Yeah, let me show you the photos. Here's me at the beach. Here's the sea. It's blue. There's a picture of the sky. That's blue as well. Here's another picture of me at the beach. There's me lying down on the beach. I fell asleep. That was exciting. Here's me eating an ice cream.
What, at the beach?
Yeah, at the beach. I'm there in the water. There's me being eaten by a shark, if only. If only that was one of the photos. There's actual video footage of a shark biting my leg off. That would be worth watching, wouldn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, if you are one of those people who... I mean, I feel like I'm being a bit hypocritical because I'm now going to tell you all about my holiday. But I didn't go to the beach. I went to New York, so it's a little bit different. But just bear that in mind. I mean, we all forget... We all know that we hate looking at other people's holiday photos, unless they're brilliant, unless they're genuinely amazing. So just bear that in mind next time you show someone your holiday snaps. Just think, oh, maybe they don't care about this. Or just edit. You might have taken 300 photos with your wonderful new SLR camera. But just edit out the crap and just show us the best of. Okay? Fine. Good. On that subject of holiday photos, despite what I've just said, you will find a slideshow on my website, which you can choose to look at or not. You don't have to look at it. That's the thing. I won't be offended if you don't look at the slideshow. But if you want to see some images of New York and stuff that I saw, then you can check out the website. I've got a new website. I'm not going to go into it in massive detail now, I promise. But the website address is teacherluke.co.uk. Teacherluke.co.uk. If you visit teacherluke.wordpress.com, that still works. It'll take you to the new one. All right? This is the third URL that I've had so far. But it's fine because teacherluke.wordpress.com still works, as I've said. I've also got lukesenglishpodcast.com. I've got that as well. I've got I've got teacherluke.com. Got that one too. I've got teacherluke.uk. I think I've got luketeacher.com. I've got loads. I bought loads of them, And they're all going to be set up so that they will all take you ultimately to my website. So you've got no excuse for not visiting the website now. Let's have a little bit of noise. That's nice. Right. So there we go. People's holiday stories can be boring, but I hope this one won't. Let's see. I certainly hope that this episode holds your attention. It should, because New York City is a very vibrant and interesting place, and there are lots of things to say about it. Some of you may have been there. You've probably seen there, and you know what I'm talking about. Some of you may never have been. It might be a place that you want to visit. It might be a place that you don't care about. Well, you know, regardless of that, I'm going to be talking to you about it. You'll also hear me during this episode using all kinds of phrases and vocabulary, the sort of language that's used to describe a holiday or a trip, or language for describing places and experiences, okay? I haven't actually formally planned to teach you any specific items of vocab. We'll just see what comes up, okay? But since I will be talking about going to New York, I'm sure that just naturally all kinds of natural expressions and things will come out of this. So let's get started, all right? So I went in April. That's about 6 weeks ago from the date that I'm recording this. But the holiday's still pretty fresh in my memory. I didn't get a chance to record any stuff when I was actually there, because obviously I was just, you know, on holiday. I wasn't working. Let's see. Bit of context for you. I've lived in a few cities in the world. I've lived in London. I've lived in Yokohama, Tokyo in Japan. I've lived in Paris. I've lived in Liverpool. I've also visited quite a few other cities like Berlin, Barcelona, Milan, Rome, Oslo, mainly in Europe, Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam, and other places too. And each city really has its own unique atmosphere and its own sort of specific story and appeal. New York, though, seems to be like the king of cities. You know, I've never been to Moscow, I've never been to Sao Paulo, never been to Madrid, never been to Prague, I've never been to Seoul in Korea, although I have been to the airport in Seoul, Incheon Airport. I fell asleep for 3 hours in the airport. Lovely airport in Seoul, really good internet connection, well done South Korea, much better than, I think South Korea's got the best internet connection in the world, and it was certainly good in the airport. I really enjoyed it, thanks. So I've been to some places. There are loads of places I haven't been to and that I would love to visit, and one day I will go to those places. But New York kind of sticks in my imagination as the king of cities. Perhaps it's just because it has the best marketing, you know, with all the movies that have been set there and TV shows. They've got lots of very recognizable buildings. It's a, you know, it's something that sticks in the memory a lot. Maybe it's just their marketing, but overall, New York seems to be, for me, the best example of a modern metropolis. You know, a super city. Also, there are kind of different levels of experience that you can have when you visit a place. If you've lived there all your life, then you'll know one version of it. If you're a permanent resident, but you've lived in other places, then you'll probably have a different perspective. And if you're just visiting as a tourist, you'll have another vision. As a tourist, I realise that I'm just kind of scraping the surface, really. The reality of living there must be quite different to the thing that you experience as a tourist. I expect it can be quite a tough place to live, just like anywhere else. New York City is known for being quite a stressful place for its residents. Maybe not so much these days. It's changed a bit. Back in the 1970s, the 1980s, and part of the 1990s, New York was quite a dangerous place, I think. There was quite a lot of crime in some parts of the city. There were some kind of no-go areas. If you've seen a film like Taxi Driver, the Robert De Niro film Taxi Driver, that's set in New York, and that's pretty rough. That he drives through some pretty rough places, and you get the impression it's a sort of seedy world of crime. It's not so much like that anymore. Somehow they've fixed it, and it feels really safe. It's great. It's a great place to walk around. Obviously, you should be careful of your belongings when you're in any city, but New York generally seems to be pretty safe, and people were really friendly. I'll come back to that in a minute. So the stereotype is for New Yorkers is that they're always rushing around shouting, you know, I'm walking here, you know, that sort of thing. Hey, buddy, you know, your mother, that kind of stuff. I don't know what that was that I just did. That was a kind of angry New Yorker, I suppose. Or, you know, desperately trying to get a cab and they can't get a taxi. You know the stereotypes we see in films, you know, guys trying to whistle a cab and he can't get one, or someone arguing with someone else in the street. Or I always imagined kind of in New York, sort of someone going into a deli and very loudly ordering their food. So, yeah, I want, give me a hot dog with relish and hold the mayo and give me a Sprite, you know, that kind of thing. Very loud and sort of stressed out, people ready to argue and get into disagreements. It wasn't really like that, actually. It was pretty chilled out. Again, maybe because I was a tourist, but it felt pretty chilled out and cool and awesome. Also, New York must hold a lot of secrets for the people who know it well. You know, they probably know the best places to go, the best food joints, the shortcuts through the streets, and all the other little tricks that you pick up regarding just how to get by in the city. For example, in London, you learn fairly quickly that you're expected to do things in a certain way. There's a queuing etiquette, you know, just like how you sit down at a table in a pub. You know, you've got to go and get served first. All the little bits of etiquette, areas in town that you should avoid at certain times. So as a tourist, as I said, I was just scratching the surface, really. So this is like a tourist report of New York. New York has a lot to offer to everyone, though, either permanent residents or temporary visitors. It's a vast, sprawling place which has many faces. It's pretty clear by now, I suppose, for you, that I loved it. You know, I loved it. I thought it was incredible. It was amazing. I had been to New York before. I went there in 1989 when I was about 12 years old, so I wasn't really old enough to fully appreciate it. I couldn't really appreciate it fully because I was so young. All I remember is that it was really big and that we went up the Empire State Building, and I remember standing in Times Square looking up at all the lights, and there was a huge Batman sign because the first Batman movie, directed by the guys whose name I can never remember, it starred Michael Keaton as Batman. Anyway, I just remember the huge Batman sign. I was really obsessed with Batman at that time. I still am, to be honest. So anyway, going back there as a 36-year-old at the time was just great because I can suddenly see it with new, fresh adult eyes and all that kind of thing. So I also know that New York, compared to the USA as a whole, is quite different. So what you see in New York and the experiences you have there don't really tell you about the whole of America, because it's a very, very diverse country, isn't it? We tend to just get one version of America in the media, you know, from films and stuff like that. People around the world, we do get exposed to a lot of American culture all the time. It's on TV, it's just everywhere, constantly. America is a very public country. Does that make sense? I mean, America likes to tell its own story to the rest of the world. Sometimes the rest of the world doesn't care. You know, we think, look, we're not your audience, you know. That's how it feels at times. So sometimes the rest of the world, we have a slightly anti-American attitude because we're fed up with the kind of flag-waving, in-your-face attitude. But when you go there, right, when you actually go to America, it's quite different. And you realize that this is just a place, just like anywhere else in the world. It's not any kind of better than any other country, but nevertheless there is a sense in the US, there is an atmosphere of kind of, it's difficult to explain what it is, but there is a sense of that kind of hope I mean, I don't necessarily believe in all the stuff about freedom and liberty, because I don't think they're any freer or more liberated than some other countries. But there's a sense in America, there's positivity. It's a place where you can go to get things done. It's a very pragmatic place. It's quite an inspiring place because you know that people have achieved a hell of a lot of things there. Also, the fact that America, particularly New York, is such a multicultural place. And so everyone's invested. Like in a way, the whole world is kind of invested in the success of America. And you go to New York and you realize this place has got a story of many people coming from many parts of the world, coming to New York with a with, I wouldn't say a dream, just coming to New York hoping to build a better life. So it's the new world, and you get a sense of that this place was created over the last couple of hundred years, and it's built on hope and dreams and that kind of thing, which is a pretty interesting atmosphere to tap into. So New York is not really indicative of America as a whole, all right? In fact, it's a generally held belief that the coasts of America, the East Coast, the West Coast, the big cities, they have a different aesthetic and a different sort of intellectual attitude to, say, the middle of the country, that kind of thing. So New York, yeah, it's very European in some ways. It's also very, well, I said it's very multicultural. You get different parts of the city, you feel like you're in different parts of the world almost. It's cool. Other cities are like that too. London is a good example of that. There are so many different communities in London that you can go to one place and it feels like you're in, you know, suddenly you feel like you're in Turkey, you know, because there's so many Turkish restaurants and Turkish shops around. There's obviously Chinatown, all that kind of thing. Same thing in New York. You might be thinking, why New York? Well, I don't really need to explain that now because I've just been through it. So if you're still wondering why I went to New York instead of any other place, I think I've already answered that. But my girlfriend offered it to me as a birthday treat, a birthday gift, which is very sweet of her because she, you know, she's heard me talking about New York before and saying, I'd love to go back. You know, I find it fascinating. I'd love to just, you know, get a taste of what it's like in New York. Having lived in some big cities in the world, New York is the one that's... I know that probably at this stage, I'm never going to be able to live there permanently, but I'd love to do it. I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of the Beatles, and I kind of think of John Lennon. John Lennon, who lived in Liverpool, he lived in London, and he lived in New York. His wife was Japanese, so there's this kind of connection with these places. I read a lot about John Lennon. I'm curious about his New York life. I think he was quite happy when he lived there. All these things make me slightly interested in New York. And so it was great to actually go and see it. Right, so how did we get there? Well, we flew, of course. In the olden days, people would take boats. It would take ages to get there. But now you can get there in just about 7 hours from Europe. So we flew. You know, all we had the whole flight experience and all that stuff. Flying on planes. It's a weird thing, isn't it, when you think about it? You're actually flying in the air. I don't know if people ever realised that they would ever get the chance to do that. But, yeah, there you are, flying through the sky, which is brilliant. It is brilliant, except for the fact that on the plane, it's just uncomfortable, isn't it? The air is all stale. The seats are too close together. It's really uncomfortable. But they do their best to try and make it better. Well, I'd say they do their best. They could at least... they could give us more space. But so they need to pack as many people in as possible, I think. So they give you in-flight entertainment. So I watched loads of movies and things. What's it like being on a plane for about 7 hours? What are the difficulties and the joys? The difficulties are just the fact that you're cramped in and there's that lingering sense in the back of your mind that what if the plane crashes? What happens? What if there's a problem with the engine? Is everything okay? Is the pilot okay? Is he all right? I hope everything's okay in the cockpit. There are those thoughts in the back of your mind, but usually you just try and forget about that. Just try and enjoy the flight. It's very uncomfortable because of the seats and stuff. Those toilets as well, tiny little toilets. Anyway, I'm not going to go into a whole Jerry Seinfeld thing about aeroplanes. You know, what's the deal with aeroplane food? No, I'll let Jerry Seinfeld cover that one. One thing is that I've I forgot to be nice to the stewardess at the beginning. You know, the stewardesses, the trolley dollies, whatever you want to call them, the air hostesses. And what's that crackling noise? Could you hear a crackling noise on the podcast? Maybe. Maybe having a little technical issue there. I wonder what that is. What could that be? Never mind this. This is just me dealing with technical things. So okay, you know when you get on an aeroplane, you've got the stewardesses and stuff. You must remember to be really nice to the stewardesses. Smile, say thank you, make a good impression at the beginning. I know that they're there to serve you, but forget about that. You've got to make friends with them quickly because they're important to you. They're going to provide you with water and food. They're basically going to keep you alive for that journey. I know that you won't die of hunger on a plane, but you know what I mean. I forgot to do that. For some reason, I didn't say thank you. No, that I know what happened. I had my tray up. No, I had my tray down, and she came round to tell me to put my tray up, and I didn't notice her. I had my MP3 player on, another problem on a plane. I had my MP3 player on. I didn't hear her saying, "Excuse me, can you put your tray up for me?" Didn't hear that. So, of course, she got pissed off with me and she ignored me for the rest of the flight. She was French. I should probably clarify that. let's see. They're not... these stewardesses are not so much there to serve you, but to just dictate to you what you must do. You know, she's like, I need you to turn that off for me, please. That's a typical thing that sort of English air stewardesses say when they see you listening to music. I need you to turn that off for me. Oh, I'm turning it off for you and not for everyone else on this flight. That's the whole iPods crashing planes thing, which you know my attitude on. I do know that there is a technical reason for us turning off our phones and our MP3 players. But sometimes you do wonder, really? Is my Samsung going to crash the plane? Because I'm not sure it's that effective. I mean, it can't even download my emails sometimes. I don't think it's going to be able to bring a plane down. You know what I mean? Anyway, in-flight entertainment. I watched a few movies. I watched the Walter Mitty film, which is the Ben Stiller film about a guy who's bored with his life and he's fallen in love with a woman at work and he decides he's going to go off on an adventure and find himself, and it's quite moving. I also watched a film called All Is Lost, which is about Robert Redford. It's not actually about Robert Redford. It's about a character played by Robert Redford. He goes out on a boat, he has an accident, and everything goes horribly wrong. I'm not going to tell you what happens in the end. Maybe he dies, maybe he doesn't die. But both of those films, both of them, they made me feel really emotional. I don't know why, but at the end of each film, I started welling up, I started crying. And that's, I don't normally, I mean, I'm in touch with my emotions, ladies and gents, but I don't usually cry at films like that. So I was like getting all emotional watching Robert Redford struggling with his boat. Like, oh my God, oh, what's going to happen to Robert Redford? He tried so hard to keep the boat on the water. Oh, Robert, oh dear. I loved all those films you made. I love Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Oh God. You know, I was there getting emotional. My girlfriend's like, what's the matter with you? I don't know. Why is it that happens in aeroplanes? Why do we get more emotional when we're in the sky? I want to know. I want to know why that is. There's questions about the best places and worst places to sit. In my opinion, I like to be in an aisle seat. You can have a window seat or an aisle seat. The worst place is when you have neither. When you're stuck right in the middle, you're not in an aisle, you're not next to an aisle, you're not next to a window, you're just next to two other people. And if they're American people, then, you know, you might be squeezed in there a little bit tightly, if you know what I mean. I like the aisle seat. Why? Because it gives me the freedom to just get up and just go to the toilet and have a little walk around without having to climb over some stranger, you know? The window seat's great because you can get to see views, but, you know, I can take it or leave it now. I've seen the Earth from the sky before. It's beautiful, but no, I want access to the toilet, please. Thank you. Also, I like to stretch my leg out into the aisle. which I know can be annoying for other people, but just ask me and I'll put my leg in. It's fine. This fears about landings and takeoffs. Normally, I'm pretty cool. I'm like, yeah, it's fine. It's just a massive metal cylinder which is going to somehow defy all the laws of physics and fly through the air. Yeah, no problem. I'm sure it's going to be fine. Normally, I'm quite cool. But sometimes I do get a bit nervous about the takeoff. And then there's turbulence in the air where the plane goes up and down. You know, turbulence. That can be a bit stressful. It was an okay flight. Absolutely fine. We arrived in America and I looked out of the, you know, I looked across the plane and looked out of the window and saw lots of views of cars. That was the first thing I saw. Some big highway with all these cars from the air. I was like, oh, look, America. America, there it is. And I had a good look at it. And it was just big American cars. I was like, wow, that is real America, isn't it? We arrived in immigration, and there was a very long queue in immigration. I think that's a big deal in the States. They like to check very carefully who's coming into the country. Very long queue. The staff at immigration were quite strict. I remember I had my cell phone out and I was like checking an email or something. And the guy was like, I need you to turn off that cell phone, sir, sir. Sir, put the cell phone away. You know, and I was like, I'm just turning it off. And he said, you don't need to turn it off. Just put it in your pocket. Put it in your pocket. I was like, oh, you mean my pocket? He's like, don't get smart with me, buddy. He didn't actually say that. Don't get wise with me, asshole. He didn't say that, but he could have done. It's like, sir, I'm going to need you to put the cell phone down. Put the cell phone down, sir. You know. It could have got dramatic, but it was okay. But they were quite strict at immigration. I suppose they're a bit freaked out still by what happened in 2001, maybe. I don't know. Maybe they've got reason to be alarmed, you know. Anyway, when I finally got through to immigration, it was quite cool. The guy at the desk was quite chilled out and nice. And there, for some reason, when I was talking to the guy at the desk, there was a kid playing around behind me. And the immigration guy was like, is he with you? And I was like, no. He said, do you have children, sir? And I was like, not as far as I know. You know, now would be quite a weird time to find out that I did have a son, you know. And why has he followed me to New York? You know, that kind of thing. We had a bit of banter. I had a bit of banter with the immigration guy. It was quite fun. I thought, these American people are fun, aren't they? Arriving in the airport, the very first thing. So after getting through the immigration stuff and getting our bags and all that stuff, we got actually into the main airport, the public area. The first thing that hit us immediately, the smell of French fries and ketchup. That was just the first smell of America. And I was like, smell the freedom. I mean, fries. You know, it was just French fries and ketchup. Bit of noise there. And that was the first smell. We took the train. The train was quite loud. It had quite loud and aggressive announcements. You know, like, please put your bags up on the things. Please do not leave your bags in the central aisle. Please put all your bags on top. I will not repeat this message. He didn't say the bit about repeating the message, but it was quite sort of aggressive. It's like, all right, okay, I'm going to put my bag up. I'm sorry. Sorry for just having a bag. But we actually couldn't do it. The bags were too big. Oh, drama. People, though, were immediately friendly and helpful. We arrived, in New York itself, in Manhattan, people regularly stopped in order to sort of say, hey, can I help you at all? Well, it didn't say it like that, but they were like, where are you going? You know, what do you need to do? Where are you going to? And you know, people were very helpful. People are like that in London, too, generally. In Paris, no. No, in Paris, they're kind of like, oh, you don't know where you are? Well, that's your problem. You stupid idiot. I don't know if they're that rude, but generally, if you're standing in the street with a map, it's not very common for a French person. Ah, I see you in my capital city. I'm very proud of this city. I will show you everything. No, they're like, ah, I see that you are a tourist. That is just another reason for me to hate you. I don't know what happened to the accent there at the end. So, first of all, we actually got off at the wrong stop and got off in New Jersey. That was exciting. We got out and was like, here we are in Manhattan, and walked around. It's like, it looks a bit dull. Where are all the skyscrapers? Tried to get a taxi to the hotel. I was like, yeah, we'd like to get a taxi to Clinton Road, please. And the taxi driver was like, Clinton Road, where's that? And I was like, it's nearby. It's only a few streets away. And he was like, do you want me to take the Brooklyn Tunnel? I was like, you're not going to need to take a tunnel, surely. We're already in Manhattan. He's like, no, you're in Jersey. I was like, what? You're in New Jersey. And I was like, idea, come on. You can't, you don't, I know because I'm a tourist, you think you can drive me around the block and make me pay extra. Don't try and tell me I'm in New Jersey. And he was like, no, sir, you are in New Jersey. And I was like, oh, yeah, I am, aren't I? Sorry. So we had to get back on the train. Finally arrived in Manhattan at Penn Station in the middle of Manhattan. Came out of the station. Boom. There it is. Classic New York. Big buildings, big skyscrapers, yellow taxi, Madison Square Garden there behind us, loads of people. Everything is big. Everything in America is big. The buildings, the cars, the people. Some people seem to be sort of almost like square in shape. I saw these guys, like these sort of blue collar guys who were walking around. They look like they're just square blocks. They're Americans or New Yorkers are just a different shape. Big guys, square kind of guys. Obviously, you get different shapes and sizes, but I saw some shapes and sizes of people that I don't normally see in Europe. Some classic New York accents. The train staff speaking with that sort of New Jersey accent or something. Police officers. A girl who helped us to buy train tickets. What did she say? I was like, do you need any help at all with your train tickets? You know, I was like, yes, please. I'd like to buy a ticket to New York. You're in New York already. You know, I don't know if that's a completely accurate. It's some sort of American accent. It's not necessarily the one that she did. But hey, there's that kind of New York thing. Hey, come on. Hey, you're in New York. You want a burger? You want to get some coffee? Come on. What's the matter with you? Okay, that's more of an Italian-American thing. But anyway, you hear all these different accents. It's like, wow, this is real. It's actually happening. It's not just a movie. We took a taxi to our neighborhood, and the taxi arrived was exciting. I was like, wow, we're in a yellow taxi in Manhattan. This is amazing. Looking out the windows at all the big skyscrapers, every now and then catching a glimpse of the Empire State Building as it went past. Fantastic stuff. I'm looking at the clock here on the podcast. This is 36 to 37 minutes. Right, I'm going to have to speed up a bit. There was a TV in the back of the taxi. That was cool. We got dropped off in our neighborhood, which was Lower East Side of Manhattan, a street called Clinton Street. Really cool area. Quite down market, you know, a little bit rough, but very cool and very hip. Lots of graffiti everywhere, but lots of nice cafes, places that sold like really nice coffee and cakes and bagels and sandwiches. It felt safe. It felt very trendy as well. Organic cafes and stuff like that. To be honest, it just felt like 100 movies and TV shows. I just felt like I was in a movie. I know that's a cliche. Everyone says that. Wow, it felt like I was on a movie set. But it really did. And that was brilliant. Just being there was like, wow, the steps outside this apartment building. Wow, this is just so New York. You know, the color of the painted curb, the taxis, just everything. It's just really weird to be in this place that I've seen so many times in films. So that was cool. We unpacked and just discovered the area. First thing we did, we felt very jet lagged. We were kind of like a bit suffering from the jet lag. But the first thing that we did was to visit a delicatessen called Katz Delicatessen, which is a sort of Jewish deli. And they serve these amazing, massive sandwiches of what's the bloody stuff called? Can't believe I can't remember off the top of my head. They serve sandwiches with beef, like a certain kind of prepared beef, and it's absolutely delicious. I'm just looking at Katz Deli here, and I'm going to find the name of this. Normally I could remember, but I would need to stop talking to just focus on remembering it. So I'm just going to look at the website instead. They had sort of hot dogs, beautiful, delicious chicken soup, pastrami. That's it. pastrami sandwiches. Pastrami is a kind of beef, and they serve these huge sandwiches with massive loads of pastrami in them. Delicious, and just exactly what we needed. So we had some pastrami and some chicken noodle soup. Delicious, amazing. And Cat's Deli, wow, it's such an authentic feel, like the real authentic New York deli. Photographs of people on the walls, black and white photographs, guys kind of shouting out their orders to each other. It's brilliant. Cat's Deli has been featured in a few movies. For example, When Harry Met Sally, there's a scene in Cat's Deli where they're sitting at a table and what's her name, Melanie Griffiths? No. Oh my God, my memory is suffering today because I'm trying to speak and remember at the same time. And as we know, men cannot multitask. When Harry... I don't think I need to do this, but I've started doing it, so I'm going to finish. I'm going to tell you the name of the actress who is in this film, When Harry Met Sally. Meg Ryan and Billy Crystal. It's a romantic comedy set in New York, and there's a famous scene where they're sitting in Cat's Deli, and Meg Ryan starts to fake an orgasm to show him that he can't tell the difference between a real orgasm and a fake one. And she does this whole fake orgasm there at the table, and it's very embarrassing, and everyone's looking, and he feels really ashamed. And then we see like an older woman turn round and say to the waiter, "I'll have what she's having." Very funny. Food there is amazing. Lovely pastrami sandwich. Very good. First full day. The next day was our first full day. We went to Brooklyn. We walked over Brooklyn Bridge to Brooklyn. Amazing views of all of the buildings, big skyscrapers and stuff. It was amazing stuff. In Brooklyn, it's different. There's a sort of slightly more local atmosphere there. Obviously, New York is separated into five boroughs. Manhattan itself, Brooklyn. Then we have the Bronx. We have Queens. And I think the fifth borough is Staten Island, not Coney Island. I'm just going to check that just to make sure I'm correct. We have Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, and Staten Island. I was right. So we couldn't see all of it. We spent most of our time in Manhattan, which is the main central island with all the big skyscrapers on it. But also we did visit Brooklyn because it had been recommended to us. I'm going to just drop down the music a little bit. Just going to give you a rest from that. Just lowering the volume on that a little bit just to give you a break. Okay. I might put some other music on in the background. I'll see how I feel. Anyway, Brooklyn, really cool. It's more local. You get the feeling you're in a little village or something. Although there are sort of big buildings in the center, there are also other areas in Brooklyn that were really cool. We went to a flea market, and that was nice. Do you know the TV show Sesame Street? It felt a bit like I was in an episode of Sesame Street. Just the brownstone buildings and stuff. Really cool flea market. We're selling old vintage clothes and stuff like that. We ate some local food there. There was a guy playing really loud soulful house music. So it was kind of a cool atmosphere with the good music going on. We turned a street corner and there were a bunch of police officers taping off an area of the street with yellow police lines. You know, like in movies or in TV shows like NYPD Blue, if there's been a murder in a building, they use that yellow tape to block it off, and it says police line, do not cross. And so we saw this happening, these police officers with their police cars and their police uniforms, their hats and everything, taping off the area. It's like, wow, this is just like a film. What the hell? Incredible. What's happened in that building? It was a cool place, a quite hipsterish, but really good atmosphere with a good kind of community spirit. It reminded me of London a lot. In fact, to be honest, New York generally reminded me of London. It was like London on steroids. You know, it had the same kinds of things, probably a bit bigger, but similar sorts of communities, a similar spirit to it, similar level of multiculturalism, similar attractions, you know, the museums, the parks, the busy tourist areas, all that kind of thing. Similar level, similar types of stuff, but just on a big scale. So like London on steroids, it felt. Brooklyn, for example, felt a bit like South London or the trendy parts of East London. Soho felt like Soho. There's an area in Soho. There's an area in New York called Soho. There's also an area in London called Soho. And they were really similar. Lots of kind of great places to go shopping. All the sort of clothing brands have shops and outlets there. Nice bars and cafes. Times Square was like Leicester Square or Piccadilly Circus, but much bigger. Leicester Square, Piccadilly Circus, these are the places that have the movie premieres. That's where you have those big neon lights and big shining Coca-Cola signs and stuff. Same thing in Times Square, just much bigger. Parts of Broadway felt like Oxford Street with all the big shopping brands and so on. But yes, much, much bigger. Everything is bigger. Have I said that yet? Have I said that everything's bigger yet? The food portions are bigger. Drinks are bigger. Which is convenient because you can just always order the small size. Because small over there is kind of big for me. So I can just always order small. And it's you get like a good portion. Drink bottles, I think, are about 25% bigger than they are back home. I bought a bottle of fruit drink. It's the same stuff that we have here. But there, the same things are just like 25% bigger. It's amazing. We walked back from Brooklyn to Manhattan via Williamsburg, which is a very super cool area full of trendy people and hipster shops and cafes. It was very hot and sunny. On the way back, we stopped near the river to rest. And there was a large open area with a sports field, grass, and bars with big barbecues outside. And there were lots of people drinking and eating in the sunshine. And there was an amazing view of Manhattan, a great view of the Manhattan skyline from across the river in front of us. We kept walking and came across a Latin bar that was playing this loud salsa music. And there were loads of people drinking and dancing outside the bar. And this was just in the sort of early evening on a Saturday. This was just a street corner near the Williamsburg Bridge, and it was about 6 p.m. And I realized then sort of how multicultural the place is. There's a large Latin community, and that's reflected in the music that you hear. In fact, New York is famous for its diverse music. There's the kind of Afro-Caribbean thing, the Latin thing, disco music, hip-hop, a Caribbean influence, a jazz tradition, funk music, soul music, and also folk and rock music as well. It all combines to create a pretty brilliant melting pot. And one of the cool things was just to listen to music coming out of people's cars. You know, they have this thing in New York and probably other places where they drive around with the windows open, playing their music really loud. It's like they're DJs in cars, you know. So wherever we were staying, you could hear these cars sort of blaring out music. And it was always really good sounding music. It's like sort of kind of soulful electro stuff or hip hop or reggae or whatever. It's just great. We visited the skyscraper district. So the cool things about skyscrapers or big buildings that are on the skyline, and also this is true for Mount Fuji in Japan, the cool thing about them is that you see them from lots of different angles in the city. So, you know, you can go to any part of the city and you get a different view of these famous landmarks. So you can, for example, be walking around any part of New York and you'll catch the Empire State Building or the Chrysler Building from a different angle. And immediately it kind of gives you, it gives that area of the city a kind of distinction, you know. So if you go to, I don't know, if you go to Williamsburg, and you go down to the river, then you get like a view of these buildings. But it's a view that's unique to that spot in New York. So every place that you go that has a view of something gives it an extra special distinction. There are places like that in London. For example, if you go to Primrose Hill, which is near Camden, that's a really distinctive place because of the view of London that you get, because it's on a hill, you can see a lot of the city. Nowadays, if you're in South London, you get views of the Shard. If you're in East London, you get to see the Gherkin and so on. So each sort of landmark gives all the surrounding areas a certain distinctive quality because they can see the buildings, and that's awesome. Okay, I need to hurry up a little bit here because I'm running out of time and I don't want this to be too long. Okay, so I need to self-edit slightly. Okay, let's see if I can focus on some of the highlights. So shopping, did some shopping. I didn't see Spider-Man. I was expecting to see Spider-Man. Like looking up at all the skyscrapers, you kind of expect any second to see Spider-Man swinging around between the buildings, you know. But no, unfortunately, I didn't see him. We went up the Rockefeller Plaza building. I highly recommend it. If you go to New York, don't go up the Empire State Building. Why? Because you can't see the Empire State Building. So go up the Rockefeller Building. You'll get a great view of the Empire State Building and everything else. Did some shopping, bought some shoes, some sneakers, as they call them in the States. In New York, everyone wears sneakers, trainers, we call them. I don't know why they call them sneakers. I don't think anyone is using them for sneaking around. You know, for walking quietly like a robber. It's not like everyone in New York is going, shh, you gotta walk quietly. This is New York. Don't make too much noise. You've got to sneak around. No, I don't know why they call them sneakers, but they do. In the UK, we call them trainers. I don't know what we're training for. Maybe just so that we can eventually get some better shoes one day. Sports shoes is another word for them. Although I'm pretty sure that I won't be doing any sport in these shoes. Probably the opposite of sport. Just like standing around and drinking. So there's a customer service culture in the States. Big servings of everything. Fine. We went to the Metropolitan Opera House. The Met. Which is a famous opera house, and we saw a production of Madame Butterfly. Amazing visuals. I mean, okay, first of all, the opera house is fantastic. It's kind of art deco in style, modernist style art deco, but really, really classy as well. Beautiful, modern but classic. Lovely open space with some very chic-looking New Yorkers in the audience. The stage at the Met is very big, and so it's got lots of potential for theatrical productions, and in this production they used the stage really, really well. Madame Butterfly is an opera, basically, and it's an Italian opera. It tells the story of an American soldier who goes to Japan, and he falls in love with a Japanese woman and promises to come back and marry her. He does, he marries her, then he disappears, and it's all very sad, okay? Production was directed by Anthony Minghella, who is a British director who directed The English Patient, Cold Mountain, and so on. His films seem to tell similar stories to the one in Madame Butterfly. Lovers who are separated by large distances and who live with the impossible hope of reuniting with their lovers one day. Madame Butterfly tells a similar story. To be honest with you, I wasn't that impressed by the story. And the script was pretty bad as well. They sang it in Italian, but we had subtitles in English. Maybe it's just because in the original version, in Italian, it's probably a lot more impressive, you know, the script. But because it's been translated, the script was pretty, pretty bad. You know, the lines of dialogue didn't seem to be very, very well written to me. Maybe it's just the translation. Maybe it's just because it's opera. You know, it's a different medium. It's not like cinema. In the cinema, it's all about the script and about the performances in the direction, but the script is also very important if it's a good film. So maybe in opera, it's not so much about the script, but it's about the visuals and the singing. As I said, it's probably more impressive in Italian. Anyway, I found the script and the story to be pretty cheesy and a little bit stupid, in fact. I mean, I don't mean to be a Philistine or anything, but... Well, I mean, okay, very quickly, the story is about, he's an American soldier, he's very sort of pleased with himself, and his whole attitude is, well, wherever I sail, that's my home, wherever I lay my hat, that's my home, and I can take advantage of anything that comes in my way, and all the beautiful women that I meet, I can have them as my own. This is his attitude. He goes to Japan, he comes ashore, he sees a woman who he likes, he flirts with her. She obviously loves the attention. She's very excited to have this American soldier giving her all this attention. And they both believe that they've fallen in love with each other. and we're supposed to agree with this, but I wasn't convinced by it at all, because I thought, she doesn't know anything about him. She doesn't know who he is. She can hardly understand what he's saying. He is just too in love with himself to love anyone else. And he also keeps saying things like, well, you know, I'll marry you, but one day when I get a real wife, you know, he's kind of saying all these things suggesting that actually he doesn't really love her. He doesn't care about her, and he's planning to marry her just because it's an experience. And then, of course, when he leaves and goes back to America and eventually... Well, I'm not going to tell you more because I don't want to spoil the story, but I wasn't convinced. Maybe I'm just too, I don't know, maybe I expected too much. The singing was great and the production design was fantastic. Beautiful stuff. They really captured that kind of amazing Japanese visual sensibility with the cherry blossom falling and the amazing Japanese kimonos. The singers were obviously very impressive, but I was more impressed by the general experience of being at the Metropolitan Opera House than by Madame Butterfly itself. The weather in New York, at the beginning, it was very sunny and hot. It was like summer. And then in the middle of the week, suddenly it started snowing. Right? What the hell is going on with the weather in New York? We went to the Opera House. Just before we went in, it was a nice day. We came out snowing. What? Maybe this is climate change. I'm sure it is climate change anyway. So we had to escape from the snow, and we like headed into like a little spaghetti and meatballs shop. A bar that sold beer and spaghetti and meatballs. So we like hid in this place while the sort of rain and snowstorm passed overhead. That was nice. Hiding in this place, eating really nice spaghetti and meatballs and drinking beer. Really good, that was. Madison Square Garden. We went to Madison Square Garden. We saw a basketball game. That was amazing. It was the Chicago Bulls versus the New York Knicks. Just incredible American entertainment, you know, all the good and bad things that brings with it. So the bad things are the fact that it's just never ending. Your attention can never drop. So they play a bit of basketball, then they stop, and there's loads of adverts and music on the screens. Cheerleaders come on and they do lots of dancing and stuff. It's like your brain doesn't need to worry about being bored. In fact, your intellect isn't really involved that much. You just sit there eating chips and hot dogs and drinking Coke and just watching all of this entertaining, colorful stuff that's going on. You don't really need to think. That's the bad side of it. The good side of it is, wow, it really is entertaining. It's impressive. The Madison Square Garden is an amazing, impressive place. The seats are comfortable. I mean, if you go to a stadium like that in England, often the seats are plastic and they get uncomfortable after sitting on them for an hour. These seats in Madison Square Garden are cushioned and big and comfortable. The hot dogs, they are good. Oh, God, they are delicious. I can understand why it's easy to put on weight in the States, because the food does taste good. Mmm, yum, yum, yum. Central Park, we visited that, which is great. It's like the lung of... it's the lungs of Manhattan. In the middle there, huge green area, huge green park. It's a bit like Hyde Park, really, in London, but much bigger. And when you're in there, really, the combination of the skyline and the greenery is really appealing, because you can be there with the trees and the grass, and then you look up and there are all the Art Deco skyscrapers. That's really cool, and it does make you think of all kinds of Hollywood films again. It also makes me think of John Lennon and Yoko Ono walking around the park in the late 1970s. We saw the disco dancers and the roller skaters who hang out in the park. That was cool. Now, one of the things I wanted to do, definitely, when going to New York, was visit a comedy club called the Comedy Cellar. So I booked in advance of going. I booked a table for the two of us in this place on a Wednesday evening. Now, why? Well, you know how much I like comedy. I don't need to tell you about that more. You're convinced of that. But one of my other comedy heroes is a guy called Louis C.K. I've talked about him on the podcast. If you're into stand-up comedy, you probably know about him. He's kind of like the biggest name in stand-up at the moment, etc., etc. Big deal for me. I think last year he came to London and he sold out the O2 Arena for a few nights running. The O2 Arena sits thousands and thousands of people. It's massive. It's like Madison Square Garden, right? Louis C.K. came to London, sold out all his tickets in just a few hours for the O2 Arena. He's massive, right? Now, I know that Louis C.K. sometimes goes to the Comedy Cellar to do unscheduled performances. So I thought, right, I'm going to book a table at the Comedy Cellar and just keep my fingers crossed. Now, it's not just Louis C.K. Other people go there sometimes to practice their new material. People like Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, and other famous comics who normally you would pay top dollar in a huge venue to see them performing. So I thought, right, I've got to try and get a ticket. Went along. Louis' name wasn't on the list or anything, but I thought, oh, maybe someone's going to come at the end and do like a special appearance. So we saw the stuff. The Comedy Cellar is great. It's a very small place, a very friendly environment there. The comics were really funny. We saw about five comics and had a really good time. And then at the end, the MC said, and now coming towards the stage, your special guest for an unprompted appearance. And I was like, oh my God, who is it? He said, coming towards the stage now, Louis C.K. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And sure enough, there he was, Louis C.K. from the movies and the TV, right there, just a couple of meters in front of me doing his stand-up thing. I couldn't believe it. Now, it's a similar story to the Eddie Izzard situation. I'm so lucky this year. Maybe it's a sign, you know. I don't know, if I don't really believe in signs and that sort of thing. But still, it's pretty brilliant that I keep seeing these comedy heroes of mine. But there he was, Louis C.K., right in front of me, just doing his thing. And that was amazing. I mean, I was really starstruck, as you can imagine. We hung around in the venue afterwards and had some food there. And I kept seeing these famous comedians just walking around. Amazing place. So again, if you like stand-up comedy, and if you go to New York, you must get yourself down to the Comedy Cellar. Book it in advance. They have shows at 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock. It's great. There's a thing in New York called the High Line. Okay, down in sort of the Lower West Side of New York, there's a thing called the High Line, and it's really cool. You know that they have lots of raised train tracks that run through the certain parts of the city. Well, in this area, there are some raised train tracks that are not operational anymore. So trains don't go along them anymore. So what they've done is they've turned these into pedestrian walkways, and they've planted lots of grass and shrubs and plants and things. And now it's brilliant. It's a great way to just walk through the city. You're above the street level. You're above all the traffic and cars. You can just walk freely. You get great views all around you, and it's full of greenery and grass and stuff. Brilliant. You can walk along the High Line, and it gets you to Chelsea Market, where you can get like souvenirs, like, you know, nice souvenirs and good food. So that was good. It was a good couple of hours walking along the High Line. We visited Wall Street, which is the financial center, sort of, you know, looked around Wall Street just thinking, look at all these bankers, all these bastards and their greed and all that kind of thing. Here it is, this, the heart of darkness, in the right in the heart of you know, the financial system in New York. Not necessarily the heart of darkness, but still, it's an interesting place to be when you consider all of the issues which have been going on in the banking industry, Lehman Brothers and the financial collapse. So there we were in Wall Street, watching bankers running around, you know, busily trying to make money. Whole Foods supermarkets, they have these really great, massive organic food supermarkets called Whole Foods, and you can get really nice ingredients there. Lovely. It's not what you expect necessarily in the US. You think that you're going to get junk food everywhere, but they have loads of really good organic foods with like fresh fruit and really good ingredients. Fantastic stuff. Walking, I mean, the place is huge, so we did loads and loads of walking. I think that's why everyone in New York wears sneakers or trainers, because they have to walk around a lot. They need something comfortable. So you do a hell of a lot of walking in New York. We got fit from doing it. The first couple of days, we were exhausted at the end of each day. But by the end of the holiday, you know, you go outside and your legs are like, right, come on, let's do some walking, you know. The buildings are a bit old now in New York, so I imagine it must get very cold in winter time. They're not like really well insulated windows and stuff, so it must be pretty freezing in the winter for the locals. Let's see, lots of classy restaurants in Soho. Okay, let me tell you one more thing. This is the last thing I'm going to tell you about my New York experience. So my girlfriend, being the lovely girl that she is, set up another surprise for me. One of them was, the first one was the holiday itself. But then at the end of the holiday, she booked this special thing, right? We went to... Okay, it was a complete surprise for me. I didn't know what it was going to be. She said, on Thursday night, we've got a surprise. You don't know what it is. It's going to be cool, I hope. So let me tell you what it was. It turned out to be one of the strangest and mysterious experiences that I've had for a long time. We went to a place called the McKittrick Hotel. And there they have this thing called Sleep No More. Right? The McKittrick Hotel. So this is a 6 or 7 story building which has been converted into a bar on one floor, and the rest of the floors have been taken over by a theatre company from London called Punch Drunk. So it used to be a hotel, I think it used to be a hotel. It's been converted into a kind of theatre space and bar restaurant. Okay, so I think the second floor is the bar and restaurant. All the other floors are devoted to this strange theatrical performance. So they've converted all the rooms on all these floors, and that's about 100 rooms. They've converted them all into a very elaborate interactive theatre space. All right, it sounds a bit pretentious when I talk about it, but when you actually experience it, it's pretty cool and surprising, and gets your mind, it makes you think. Every evening in this place, a performance takes place within the space. And that rhymed, and that wasn't intentional. I'm like rapping at this point. Maybe it's the New York thing. Every evening in this place, something takes place within the space. As the audience, you can just walk around exploring it, investigating rooms, and there's a whole performance going on around you. So the rooms have all been designed in a special way. They've all got like weird, mysterious decoration. Some of the floors feel like you're in the foyer of a hotel. Other floors, it's like you are in a hospital. Other areas of the building are like you're in a castle. And then at the top, it's really weird because there's all these wood chippings on the floor, and it's almost like a warehouse or something. It's very mysterious and indeed. And the whole thing is like quite dark, and they have this moody music playing in the background, a bit like on this podcast. They have this weird, mysterious music and sort of dark noises. Sometimes just classical music starts playing in a very dramatic way. They even introduce some different smells in there to kind of create a really weird sensory experience. And all around you, while this is happening, there are actors in there. And the actors are doing a performance, right? Sometimes you see performers. Sometimes you can follow them around from room to room, observing the action from inside the space. So every now and then you just kind of come across these actors doing a performance, and you think, what's going on? And you have to work it out. You basically, from what you see, what you investigate, the little bits of performance that you see there, you start to work out that you're taking part in a kind of version of the Shakespeare play Macbeth. You start to notice characters there. You pick up letters. There are desks, and you can open the drawers of the desks, and you find letters, and you can read the letters, and you find out what the characters are doing and thinking. It's really, really amazing. The closest thing that I can compare it to was like being in a computer game, a game like Resident Evil 2, or other suspenseful horror mystery games. You might not know about Resident Evil 2. Basically, it's a very moody and scary game in which you walk around investigating rooms, looking for clues that will help you to escape a city which has been overrun by zombies. And every now and then, something surprising happens, and you have to react to it in order to survive. So it's like investigating and surviving and trying to solve a mystery. And that was exactly what this was like. So I'd never been in this kind of space before, except in a computer game. And there I was in real life. It was weird. It was like I was in a game. So, let me just try and tell you the experience. We went in, and it just looked like a normal restaurant or nightclub from the outside. But when you enter, you leave your coats, and then a silent woman gives you a playing card as you enter. She just hands this playing card to you in a mysterious way. I got number 13, and my girlfriend got a different card, right? We walked into a corridor, and it was suddenly really dark. And we were both like laughing at this point because it was just really weird. There was an illusion at the beginning of mystery of like we're walking into darkness. We walked upstairs and into a bar, and then immediately it was like walking into the bar. It was like a scene from Twin Peaks. So there was like this. There was a girl singing a jazz song near a piano. There were people dressed in 1920s costumes standing at the bar. The place was dark and smoky. There were red curtains. It felt like Twin Peaks or some kind of American film noir thriller. I kept expecting to see Jessica Rabbit, you know, at any moment from Who Framed Roger Rabbit. We got drinks and we waited. Every now and then, a man in a tuxedo with a posh British accent would call out numbers, and groups of people would disappear out of the room. And at one point, he called out my number, and that's when I had to leave my girlfriend. So we said goodbye to each other, and I went off with this small group of people, and we were like ushered through into a small room by this woman dressed in old-fashioned clothing, speaking with a very posh English accent. And she explained to us that we were about to go into the McKittrick Hotel and that we had to wear masks. So she gave us all these really weird white masks. They looked like carnival masks from Venice, you know, like Venetian carnival masks. Really weird. So when everyone put them on, suddenly everyone looks really weird and scary and you don't know who is who. And she said, please go. When you go into the space, you must don't talk to anyone. You have to just explore the space and find out for yourself what's going on. If you see people you know, don't hang out with them together. You need to walk through this space individually and work out your own version of the story. So we were in a lift, and she kept the lift stopped, and every now and then she'd let some people out on different floors. So I didn't know which floor I was on. I was on my own. I got let out into this building, and immediately I started walking around as if I was in a computer game, investigating, opening drawers and things, just noticing actors and like observing them and just trying to pick up on what's going on. There were some surprising moments too. I remember once I was going through some drawers trying to find things. I put my hand into one of the drawers and it was all wet and cold, and there was a wet cloth in there. It felt really weird, like a slimy creature or something. It gave me a shock. Walking through some areas, suddenly you come to face to face with other people with their white masks on, and it's like kind of frightening and weird. All sorts of things. I went upstairs and there was a kind of garden, stone garden area. It was inside the building, but it felt like I was outside. And there was this statue. I walked through the garden in the darkness and I came across this statue standing in front of me. And I thought, is that a statue or is that a real person? I couldn't tell. The statue was pointing right at me and I was all alone. I thought, this is so weird. And I was scared at that point because I thought, that's a person. You know, your instinct kind of tells you don't go over to that person. It just looks weird, especially the way they're pointing. So it was really weird to go over, and I went really close, and even up close, I couldn't tell if this was a real person or not. And I kind of plucked up the courage to touch the statue, and it turned out to be just a statue. Weird, though. And other strange things. I went into a little room, and there in the middle of the room was a cot. What's a cot? It's a little, like a bed for a little baby, which you can rock from side to side to help the baby go to sleep, right? A cot. A little baby's sleeping area. And then above the cot, suspended from the ceiling, were loads and loads and loads of like dolls, you know, baby dolls that children have. They pretend that they've got their own kid and they give it milk and stuff. You know, those dolls, they look a bit creepy and weird, don't they? Well, they were suspended from the ceiling above this cot were loads of dolls with their heads removed, hanging in the air. It was like, what's going on in this room? It was so creepy. All kinds of things like that were going on. And this lasted 3 hours. 3 hours of wandering around, trying to work out what was happening, having surprises, getting shocked by things, noticing actors and following them, piecing together clues that you notice. And then eventually, at the end of this, we were ushered into a communal area downstairs. So there were members of staff in there wearing black masks, and they started to appear and sort of pointed us towards this place on the third floor, I think. And there, all of the actors had gathered, all the actors that we'd kept noticing throughout the experience had gathered together around a big table, and then we saw the conclusion. I'm not going to tell you what happens, because I'm not allowed to. You're not allowed to explain what happens at the end of this performance, but it was pretty weird and scary and strange. Because after a while, you start to lose touch with what's real in that place. You just like, is this a performance, or is this, you know, what's going on? Especially since I didn't know at the beginning when I went in what it was. I didn't know at all. I thought, is this some sort of cult, or what's going on? I did bump into my girlfriend a couple of times, and we kind of saw each other and went over to each other and sort of said hello very quietly, and then, you know, went our separate ways again. So afterwards, I mean, during the experience, I kept thinking, this is ridiculous. This is I feel a bit stupid doing this. I wasn't completely engaged, but it wasn't until afterwards, like days later, even after I'd come back to Paris, I remember once actually lying in bed before going to sleep, just thinking about it. I couldn't get it out of my head, the experience that I'd been through, because my brain, my subconscious, was trying to categorize it and didn't know where to put it. You know, I was just like, what was that? What happened? What was that thing that we experienced a few days ago? What are we supposed to learn from that? So it's now occupies this sort of space in my memory of like this kind of mysterious, weird experience. And I'd love to go there again, because I know if I went there again, I'd see things I didn't see before, and I'd get more of an idea. I'd be able to solve the puzzle of what had happened there. So I suggest that you check it out, the McKittrick Hotel. The performance is called Sleep No More, which is ironic considering I did stay up thinking about it in bed. And the company that produced it is called Punch Drunk. So again, there's another recommendation. If you go to New York, go to the McKittrick Hotel, Punch Drunk. You'll see the words that I'm saying on the website here, so you can follow everything there. There is no complete transcript for this episode at the moment, but feel free to start doing one. I can open a Google document for you to start doing that if you want to. But you will find some notes. I've been reading partly from notes that I prepared earlier for this episode. So you can see a lot of what I've said here, actually, on the website. And you'll find a link to the McKittrick Hotel, so you can have a look there. All right, so that's it. That's it for this episode. I don't know how long this has been. It's an hour and 15, an hour and 16 minutes. I think this is a good time to bring this episode to a close. I hope that you're still awake. Hope you're still with me, because I realise that this mood music may have given the whole thing rather a weird atmosphere. I think we're just going to stop talking now. Thanks again for listening to Luke's English Podcast. As ever, I'm very curious to get your feedback, so leave comments under this episode and tell me what you think. I'll speak to you again soon, but for now, it's goodbye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.